and their families that the resistance will keep its promise to release all prisoners. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
A peaceful march for peace. As the bombs temporarily stop falling from the sky above Gaza, hundreds of thousands of pro-Palestine demonstrators of all faiths are back to the streets of the British capital, many traveling from other parts of the UK, united in their demands.
We need to cease fire. We need to end the siege in Gaza. We need to end the occupation and free Palestine.
A long-term solution is an immediate ceasefire, longer-term ceasefire. It is an end to the system of apartheid. It is an end to the occupation. It is an end to the oppression and systematic oppression that has been going on for the last 75 years.
Demands is obviously that Israel stops this genocide, that they allow the people to go back to their homes in Gaza, that they stop pushing them out towards the deserts. And
more than 1,500 police officers were on duty distributing leaflets warning demonstrators against the use of, quote, racist abuse and promoting terrorism, raising questions about proportionality.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on the police being put on them by the government to put a stamp down on these protests. You know, these protests are accused of being anti-Semitic, but really, these are just ordinary workers who can understand what's happening, who can see through the establishment lies, the propaganda.
What they're also demanding is that the UK government stop arming the Israeli regime and withdraw its diplomatic cover for it.
Western governments have suffered major reputational damage for their continued support for the Israeli regime's crimes against Palestinians. And the people here are highlighting Western double standards with regard to the protection of civilians in different conflicts.
Well, we see it all over. When it was the Ukrainian issue, you know, the flags were out, everyone's talking about it. Right now, it's silence across every political spectrum. Labour, nothing. Conservative, nothing. You know, and their parties that we're not going to be voting for. So, yes, we need to basically, you know, this has to be the forefront of all political activity.
The four-day truce offers some hope to these demonstrators that it might mean the beginning of the end and a breath of fresh air to more than 2 million Gazans left with few options for survival. This is the seventh protest of the kind in as many weeks, and the organizers say as long as the killing continues, so will they. Saeed Pourreza, London.
Palestine will be free has become a popular slogan at demonstrations around the world. In Seoul on Saturday, the 10th protest here against Israel's attack on Gaza, a young teacher outlined the scope of Israeli mass murder of young Palestinians.
More than 6,000 Palestinian children have lost their lives in unimaginably horrific ways, and even newborn babies were killed. Our children who should be happy at school, learning to read, learn numbers, sing and draw, and hang out with their friends, terrorists?
Hani Mansour has attended several of the rallies and marches in support of Palestinians. He argues that Palestinians are justified in defending and fighting for their homeland, and it is the U.S. hegemonic self-interest that's behind Washington's support of the illegal Israeli occupation.
America wants to dominate the world, and when Israel was established, it wanted dominance over the entire Middle East. So if people are exploited and regions are exploited, America is not harmed at all, but is the first beneficiary of everything that happens in the world.
While genocide is more and more often applied to Israel's seemingly indiscriminate attacks on Gaza, a linguistic debate is raging, putting the slaughter of thousands of people into context. Around the world, Israel appears to be losing that debate amid growing demands for a lasting truce. The ongoing release of detainees on both sides may represent some degree of optimism. Still, Israel maintains it will continue its war on Gaza. But demonstrations like this one are driving home the fact that the broader issue of Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands will eventually need to be resolved. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Another pro-Palestinian demonstration has taken place in the Yemeni capital Sana'a in solidarity with Palestinians and their resilience in the face of the Israeli aggression. Protesters also expressed support for the Yemeni government's decision to continue targeting Israel with drones and ballistic missiles. They stressed that this is a battle between good versus evil.
This is a battle against the heads and masterminds of disbelief, at the head of which is America and Israel, the great Satan and the cancer in the body of the Muslim world. By the will of Allah, victory is near.
14 nations wages airstrikes against us and all fail to deter us as we continue to fight today. We do not fear them as long as Allah is with us. We tell them that no matter how much you plot, Allah will turn their plots against them.
Last week, the Yemeni army confirmed they are able to target Israeli ships in the Red Sea and any other location. The army also stated they will target Israeli ships heading toward occupied Palestine or any other country. The Ansarullah military says its moves against Israel are part of efforts to pressure the regime in Tel Aviv to put a halt to the atrocities against Palestinians.
Yemen's armed forces will not hesitate to target all Israeli ships in the Red Sea or at any location within our reach. Yemen's armed forces will not stop launching attacks against Israelis until the regime's aggression on our Palestinian brothers ends.
The government in Sana'a believes these military moves could lead to a full-scale war with the U.S. and the Israeli regime. Despite that, Yemen leaders believe war has been permitted against those killing Muslims and forcing them out of their land.
Israel's economy is heavily dependent on imports and exports traded through Yemen's crucial Bab al-Mandab Strait. This comes as the Ansarullah movement has announced it will not allow any Israeli shipments to pass through this strait as long as the Tel Aviv regime continues its acts of aggression in occupied Palestine. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
As you enter the playground of most schools in Lebanon, it is not only the Lebanese flag which is seen waving. Most extracurricular activities and events include some mention of Gaza and Palestine. Students here have, in their own words, expressed their utter rejection of the continuous onslaught against innocent children.
What kind of sick and twisted maniac would do this to children? Like, if we look at the facts, we see that Israel has won multiple institutions for Gaza, like the hospitals, the schools, that foster like 4 to 5 innocent kids. So by standing with them, I believe that we stand for justice, we stand for freedom, we stand for compassion.
The television and news, mostly in America and Europe, they don't spot the light on these violations because they don't want to report a message to people that these the Israeli army is actually destroying the life of some innocent kids, that there is no front line defending them. This is a big challenge that we are facing right now. We should help them mentally with any type of support that we have.
We look at the screens on the TVs and you feel you just want to cry for what's happening for them. I just see something unbearable for this, incredible. We can't bear. We have to move. We have to do something for those people to save their lives. Otherwise, we are not a human being anymore.
During a school seminar, words and slogans, in addition to symbols of Palestinian resistance, are worn by the students and teachers alike.
The Palestinian kids are not only statistics of wars, they are human beings like us. They have the right to dream, the right to live, the right to have all their rights like other human beings.
I would like to express my opinion in my house, in the community, and everything, and also in supporting boys and girls in Gaza.
shouts from protests in support of Gaza and denouncing the massacres in Palestine and Lebanon have been echoing across the capital, Beirut. People of all ages have taken part, but experts believe that this war has deeply touched the conscience of the younger generations because of the daily killing of infants, which the world has not stopped.
Today, when younger generations see the U.S.-Israeli massacre of children, they realize that the U.S. is the real enemy of all mankind. It is in the interest of all the people around the world to unite against the U.S., since it has violated all norms of humanity together with the Israeli regime.
Despite their young age and the fact that they have not witnessed any wars, Lebanon's children and youth consider the war waged on Gaza as an act of terrorism. Their confusion lies in understanding why the so-called democracies of the world support the slaughter of innocent women and children. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian described the aim of the visit to the Swiss city of Geneva as pursuing the process of delivery of humanitarian aid to Palestinians in Gaza and the end of the Israeli siege of the coastal territory.
We are pursuing process of delivery of humanitarian assistance to people in Gaza. We will have meetings with UN officials and International Red Cross organization. Some of the meetings have been held, while others are on the agenda. Definitely, the humanitarian situation in Gaza is embarrassing.
Amir Abdullahian also censured the U.S. military support for Israel, saying Washington's claims of providing aid to Palestinians are just words without actions.
We have heard from the American foreign minister saying Washington seeks to send around 500 trucks of humanitarian aid to Gaza daily. But currently, between 25 to 40 trucks are only entering Gaza. One-third of this aid is water, lacking the essential food and medicine urgently needed by Palestinians.
The Iranian foreign minister made the remarks following talks with the UN Undersecretary for Human Rights Affairs, Martin Griffiths. During their meeting, Amir Abdullahian stated Hamas resistance movement's preparedness to release Israeli civilians in exchange for the end of the regime's onslaught against Palestinians. Griffiths, for his part, highlighted the importance of this topic and thanked Iran's efforts in preventing the war from spreading. Amir Abdullahian then held talks with Volker Turk, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights. Following that, he met with Mirjana Espoljaric-Egger, president of the International Committee of Red Cross. The talks all revolved around ending the siege on Gaza and the opening of the Rafah border crossing.
For the last 40 days, Israeli warplanes and tanks have been pounding the Gaza Strip. Thousands of civilians, including women and children, have been killed in the Gaza Strip. For the last 40 days, the international community has failed to propose a solution to end the war. Now, many are wondering whether the United Nations and other human rights organizations can do anything more to protect Palestinians other than just issuing condemnations. Atia Posyan, Geneva.
At the invitation of Palestinian factions, hundreds of Syrians joined their brethren to rally in Khan Yunus refugee camp to condemn Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people, especially the besieged people of Gaza. The demonstrators stressed that the Western-backed aggression and blockade will not defeat Palestine and its people. They also pointed to the failure of the Israeli regime to produce any evidence backing up its claims about the presence of a Hamas command center under Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital.
The issue of Shifa Medical Complex has exposed Israel and the international community supporting it, including the United States of America. It has proven to the world that our hospitals are solely for patients and the wounded, and that the Zionist enemy only seeks to destroy them.
Two residents of the Khan Yunus refugee camp were martyred in Al-Aqsa flood operation. The people of the camp take pride in their martyrs. Participants affirmed that the path of liberating Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque is difficult, but pledged to make all necessary sacrifices in the battle for the Palestinian cause.
It is a great honor to be in a family that has a martyr for the cause of liberating Al-Aqsa, which is also the first martyr from Hanzul Nun camp. It is a very modest sacrifice for the sake of Palestine and the heroic people of Gaza.
We, the sons of the Islamic Jihad in Hanzul Nun camp, assure our people in Palestine that we stand firmly with them and with their resistance. Our hand is on the trigger until the end and to the last breath.
Meanwhile, inside the Zainab city, a solidarity event was held in support of Palestine, where families of the Palestinian resistance martyrs were honored. In turn, families hailed martyrdom as the only path to victory. Participants expressed confidence in the victory of Gaza, emphasizing that the Palestinian cause will always thrive throughout generations.
As outrage grows in the region due to the escalation of Israeli crimes, Syrians and Palestinians reaffirm their support for Gaza in the face of the Israeli aggression and their determination to achieve victory, no matter how great the sacrifices are. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
With British households under pressure from higher prices and a sharp rise in borrowing costs after 14 consecutive Bank of England interest rate rises, retail sales are expected to remain subdued in the run-up to Christmas. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to official figures, British consumers cut back on spending in recent days amid growing fears the retail industry has plunged into a recession before the key festive shopping season. Figures from the Office for National Statistics, the ONS, showed retail sales volumes in Great Britain fell by 0.9% in September compared with a month earlier, as mild weather, limited sales of colder weather gear, and consumers cut back on non-essential spending. Sounding the alarm bell over the outlook for Britain's economy as inflation remains stubbornly high, the figure wiped out retail sales growth of 0.4% in August and was worse than city economists' forecasts for a 0.2% monthly decline. Alex Kerr, an assistant economist at Capital Economics, said the sector may already be back in recession. This doesn't bode well for retail sales growth in the run-up to Christmas. Industry leaders expect consumers to buy fewer and cheaper presents before the festive season, as high household energy bills, with less government assistance for many this year, and rising grocery prices continue to put pressure on budgets. According to the latest snapshot of high street and online spending, clothing sales in Britain plunged by 1.6% in September compared to the previous month. Retailers reported that the unseasonably warm weather had hit sales of autumn wear after a joint warmest September since records began in 1884. Department store and household goods sales fell by 1.6% and 2.3% respectively month on month, as consumers cut back on big ticket purchases, highlighting the pressure on households amid the cost of living crisis. With British households under pressure from higher prices and a sharp rise in borrowing costs after 14 consecutive Bank of England interest rate rises, retail sales are expected to remain subdued in the run-up to Christmas. Economists said the monthly drop in September meant that overall economic growth had probably flatlined or even fallen. Sophie Lund-Yates, the lead equity analyst at Hargreaves Lansdowne, said while no one was expecting the month to be a bright spot for the high street, the full picture suggests a harsher-than-expected reining in of discretionary spending. Sophie Lund-Yates added, "This is a worse slide than expected and speaks to growing anxiety and the potential that we're looking at a steeper consumer pullback than forecast as we head into the Christmas trading season." British consumer confidence continues to tumble, with GFK registering the biggest monthly fall since 1994. Excluding the coronavirus pandemic, this month, as households grow more nervous about the prospects of their personal finances and the wider economy. The latest gauge of consumer optimism from GFK dropped to a three-month low of minus 30 in October, down from September's reading of minus 21. Joe Statton, the client strategy director at GFK, said this sharp fall underlines that the cost of living crisis and simply not having enough money to make ends meet are still exerting acute pressure for many consumers. There was a modest 0.2% rise in the volume of sales at food stores and supermarkets in September, although this was down on the 1.4% monthly increase reported in August. Fuel sales volumes rose 0.8% in September, as retail strikes prompted more people to travel by road, despite a surge in the cost of petrol and diesel over recent months. Jackie Baker, the head of the retail at the accountancy firm RSM UK, said that price-sensitive consumers were likely to have tightened their spending before the festive Christmas shopping season to hold out for Black Friday deals. Jackie Baker added, consumer confidence fell sharply in October, with remortgaging at the forefront of many consumers' minds. This will continue to weigh heavily on consumer spending, meaning retailers will have to work hard to come out on top in this year's golden quarter. Britain's stock market saw further losses on Friday, 20th of October, with the FTSE 100 share index falling 1.3% to finish at its lowest closing level since last August. The Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. Almost a third of British consumers are planning to reduce spending on Christmas in 2023 as the burden of lofty inflation weighs on shoppers. By contrast, according to research from PwC, only 18% of the British public intend to spend more during the holidays than they did in 2022. The Christmas season can be a make-or-break period for retailers who rely on shoppers to splurge on gifts, food and drinks for celebration with family and friends. Around 80% of those who plan to spend less blamed rising food and energy costs, while over 20% cited the challenge of mortgage payments and rent payments. Inflation in Britain slowed to an 18-month low in August, but prices remain elevated, and fewer than a third of the adults surveyed by PwC described their household finances as healthy. According to PwC, more people have begun their Christmas shopping earlier than in previous years to help budget for purchases, with one in five having started by mid-September. Lisa Hooker, industry leader for consumer markets at PwC, said, "With shoppers wanting to protect spending on family and special occasions, they're starting preparations early and being cautious. Last year, shoppers did spend more than expected, so with falling headline inflation, there may yet be a last-minute spending uptick. Retailers will certainly be on tenterhooks."
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Press TV Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, it's day three of a ceasefire which has come to an end. This after 48 consecutive days of some of the worst weapons to exist falling on the heads of Gazans in one of the most densely populated places in the world. Now, the sight and sounds of bombs falling, phosphorus burning, cut into pieces missiles made by the USA and used by the Zionist regime against Palestinians have been quieter the last 3 days. This as people in a devastated Gaza try to get supplies, if they are able to, as uncertainty looms. Will this ceasefire be extended or not? We're going to be taking a look at that on this spotlight, but I should say 39 Palestinian hostages, actually. They have been released out of Israeli detention. As we've seen in the last couple of days, Palestinians have been, of course, elated in seeing these individuals being released. Of course, we have seen that most of them are women or children, some who were very, very young when they were taken by the Israeli regime. And interestingly enough, of course, the Israeli regime has said that they were going to crack down on the Palestinians showing their happiness for the prisoners being released. So this was another threat by the regime of actually the Palestinians should control and contain their happiness and, of course, also their support for the resistance. But it did not make a difference, and the people have come out en masse to welcome these individuals back home. I'd like to welcome my guests now to this spotlight. Out of Morocco, Kevin Baird, editor of Veterans Today. And out of London, Shabir Rezvi, political analyst. Thank you both for being with me. Let's start it off in Morocco with Kevin. Kevin, how important is this ceasefire for the Palestinians, and how significant is it that the Israeli regime was forced into a deal?
Well, this is a big win for the Palestinian side. There are no two ways about that. And increasingly, even Western commentators, ranging from the pro-Palestine Scott Ritter to the fanatical, ultra-extremist, genocidal Zionist John Bolton, agree that this is a huge win for Palestine. Palestinians had been open to and indeed calling for a ceasefire and a hostage exchange. The main tactical purpose of the Al-Aqsa storm operation was to take captives who could be exchanged for the 10,000 Palestinian prisoners who are languishing in Israeli prisons. And of course, the Zionists then used this raid as an excuse to pump out absurd, mendacious hate propaganda based on lies, and then use that as their excuse to decimate the civilian population of Gaza. And they wanted to keep doing it. And they said that they were going to eliminate Hamas, and they weren't going to stop until they eliminated Hamas. That was their goal. And of course, they won't be able to achieve that. And now they've had to negotiate with Hamas and the rest of the Palestinian resistance and accede to its requests for a prisoner exchange. And all of this is making the Zionists look terrible in the eyes of the world, and even in the eyes of people like the administration in the U.S. They can't fail to notice the bad behavior of the Zionists, who are releasing these prisoners who've been horribly mistreated in Israeli prisons and telling them not to be happy, not to smile, don't celebrate. They're almost a walking caricatures of villainous. You know, they're almost walking anti-Semitic stereotypes. Whereas the Palestinian side, when they free their prisoners, it's all smiles and it's like hope to see you again. And they're obviously on very, very good terms with their Israeli prisoners. We've seen video footage of that. So this whole thing is a huge black eye to the Zionists. And it's a one in what, inshallah, will become a long series of strategic defeats for the Zionists.
All right, we definitely hope so. Well, Shabir, since 1967, there have been over a million Palestinians who have been captured by the Israeli regime. I mean, the regime says that they are arrested, but in reality, they have been kidnapped, many of them not charged or trumped up charges. How was this even allowed to happen? And how is it that the majority of the world knew nothing about this?
Hello, good evening. Thank you very much for the invitation. Look, firstly, condolences to all the martyrs in Gaza and the West Bank over the last 50-odd days and, of course, for the last 75 years, but particularly currently the brutality that has taken place. And, of course, to, support to the injured and their families who are obviously feeling the pain. Look, at the end of the day, the figure of a million has come out in the recent past, if I recall, because what has happened fantastically, as our friend from Morocco was commenting, that the reality is that the veil of so-called democracy, humanitarian, a bastion of Western civilization in West Asia, which is sort of named the Zionist entity, was getting away with it. And not only that, it has also become very clear in the last few days that Israel not only takes ordinary people from the West Bank and Gaza, particularly West Bank, as hostages, as you know, your opening comment was, that these Palestinians are hostages. They are not prisoners. They are not sort of criminals who have been taken in. They are hostages. And even if a person dies in prison, the body is kept there for, 40 years, 50 years, some of them in cold storage, to inflict more pain on the Palestinians so that their loved ones cannot be buried and the families can go and visit the graves of these individuals. So the crimes are compounding over the years, and it is becoming very clear that the PR campaign that the Zionist regime and its supporters in the West used to sort of parrot all the time, what is known in the Zionist lexicon, Hasbara, was used to hoodwink the public over the last so many years. But this particular carnage, that the lunatics who have been sort of lynching the little babies over the last 50 days in Gaza, is becoming very clear that they have really no humanity in them. They have no moral fiber, and their ethics does not exist. So this veil of hypocrisy from the Zionist regime has disappeared, and that's why you see demonstrations in London and all over the world coming out against the Zionist regime. And secondly, also Washington, the European countries, certain European nations who have given a carte blanche to the Zionist regime to continue the mayhem that has occurred over the last 50 odd days in Gaza. And let's not forget, continuously in the West Bank also for the last 50 days, where 2, 3, 4, 10 people are killed on a daily basis. And I understand about 3,000 have been abducted in that period also. So all this is, I suppose, a God-given elucidation of really what the Zionist regime is and what its Western backers are doing.
Well, Kevin, all the Palestinians who've been released by the Zionist regime were women, kids, and are kids at least when they were originally taken. Why do you think the Israelis have aggressively targeted kids and women? And we've seen in the heavy bombardment, this genocide on Gaza, that the majority of individuals who've been killed have been women and children.
That's it's a very strange aspect of Israeli mass psychology, this hatred of Palestinian women and children. The former justice minister, Ayelet Sheked, who is still currently a close associate of the Netanyahu camp, made a bit of a stir a while back when she openly called for the murder of the little snakes. That's what she called Palestinian children and babies, little snakes. She said they all had to be killed, and the mothers who bear them needed to be killed as well. And in saying that, she wasn't just getting, she didn't get fired. She didn't get even reprimanded from within Israel, because this is a part of shared Israeli mass psychology, genocidal hatred of Palestinian women and children. We see this also in the famous one shot, two kills shirts worn by the IDF. That's their favorite T-shirt. It shows a Palestinian woman with a large belly. She's obviously pregnant, and there on her belly is a target, indicating that the Zionist snipers are completely aware that they're deliberately killing Palestinian women and children. And indeed, Chris Hedges, the famous American journalist, wrote in his article Gaza Diary about how he repeatedly witnessed Israeli soldiers barking out obscene insults over megaphones in order to lure Palestinian children within range of their guns and then shooting them in the stomachs for sport. So there is a psychosis, or maybe a psychopathy, deep in the soul and mind of the state of Israel. Why do they hate the women and children so much? Well, because they know that the existence of the Zionist entity in Palestine requires genocide. And genocide means eliminating the people of Palestine. And it's women who give birth to children, as Ayelet Sheked said when she called them little snakes and the mothers who bear them. And so Israelis just want to kill off and extinguish and exterminate and rid the land of all natives. It's a genocidal settler colony. And that's what Israel has always been. And as our other guest so eloquently said, the mask has now dropped, and the whole world can see what Israel really is.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Shabir, estimates vary as to the number of people who've been killed in Gaza, as so many are still under the rubble, from between 15,000 to 20,000 are just some of the estimates. And it is quite shocking to fathom. And yet the bombings were watched in real time for 48 days without being stopped. I just want your thoughts overall on, and what does that say about the so-called existence of the international community that's supposed to make sure that they stop disputes and stop war and war crimes, and yet this has gone on for 48 days live.
Well, look, it's very clear that the Zionist entity was created by the British, the city of London where I am sitting, back over 100 years ago under the Balfour Declaration, and then continuously was supported by British when Britain had a mandate after the First World War and after the Second World War, and then obviously the creation of the state of the Zionist entity. So, and also, like Biden, when he was a young senator, said if Israel wasn't there, we would have had to create it. So really, it's a colonial, racist, imperialist project which has been planted in West Asia to control the resources. Very clearly that, of course, you know, West Asia is resource-rich, oil, gas, and so on. 25% of the world energy resources come from that part of the world. So what better way than to have a foothold in that region? So that's one sort of aspect of it. Of course, the second is that the former imperial powers, whether it's Britain, France, Holland, Spain, Germany, they, and Belgium, a tiny, pathetic little country in Europe, killed millions of people in Congo. So really, they have a history of eliminating the indigenous people globally. Therefore, they don't have a moral standing at all in any way to criticize an illegitimate child of theirs which has gone completely astray. So the reality is that that's the second point, why they do not want to sort of in any way try to sort of curtail what the Zionist entity has been inflicting, not just since 7th of October. As I said in my earlier comment, this has been going on for 75 years plus,
right,
from the time that the state of the Zionist entity was created.
Okay, so let me get Kevin back in on this discussion. Stay with me, Shabir. Kevin, now military experts from around the world are talking about the barbaric nature of the Israeli bombardments on Gaza, the type of weapons that they've used, along with the scale of the strikes on this densely populated area, is absolutely mind-boggling. I mean, why would the regime react in this way? It almost appears as if basically they're shooting themselves in the foot, because on the other hand, when people see this and see this is against a civilian population, these type of weapons, why do you think they have chosen to react in this way?
Well, I think there are two factors involved, and one is a kind of a psychological factor that's peculiar to the Zionists. Their culture, even though most the founders of Zionism, and probably most of the leaders, not all of them today, but most of them, are not religious, but their Jewish heritage conditioned them to believe that they are a special people who is always being persecuted and plotted against by the whole world. And of course, Jews have been kicked out of many, many dozens of countries throughout history. And so there's a kind of a tribal paranoia that manifests itself in Jewish identity, and also is tied in with a kind of lust for biblical vengeance. And we see this in the story of the murder of 70,000 Persians in the book of Esther and elsewhere in the Jewish scriptures. So there's that cultural factor that still influences these atheists who run Israel today. They're paranoid, and they're paranoid, psychotic, hate-filled maniacs who feel that the whole world is against them and trying to push them into the sea, and that they have the right to go out and commit atrocities against their designated enemies. It's a kind of tribal psychopathy. So that's one aspect of it. And then the other aspect of it is that they're completely free to indulge in this tribal psychopathy because they think they can get away with it with some reason. They've been getting away with mass murder, getting away with outrageous crimes, just off the scale crimes that you would think would get their entire people in really bad conditions. They've been getting away with stuff for so long. You know, they got away with, you know, murdering United Nations people, sending letter bombs to President Harry Truman and to the Prime Minister of Great Britain during the period when Israel was formed. They got away with attacking American targets in Egypt with the false flag Levant affair in 1953. They got away with trying to sink the Liberty, the U.S. Spy ship in 1967, killing 34 American sailors and wounding almost 200 others. They were going to blame it on Egypt, and they got caught, but they got away with it. The U.S. covered up for them. And then they got away with blowing up the World Trade Center and murdering 3,000 Americans on September 11, 2001. I forgot to mention the Kennedy the two Kennedy assassinations that were largely driven by the State of Israel as well. And they've been getting away with murder literally forever. And they largely dominate the highest levels of organized crime, finance, and journalism here in the United States. And the entire journalistic establishment, which is about 50% Jewish Zionist in terms of the owners and editors and publishers, is running interference for them and helping them get away with genocide. So they're driven by a psychotic, psychopathic, biblical, tribal vengeance complex. And they have a history in the past 50 years of getting away with murder repeatedly and owning the United States, which allows them to get away with murder. So that's why they think they can get away with almost absolutely anything. And we'll see whether that confidence ends up being justified or not. I think it won't be this time.
Well, Shabir, as all eyes have been on Gaza, the Israeli regime has ratcheted up its attacks on the West Bank. Just today alone, 8 Palestinians were killed. I mean, one, we look at what they have done in Gaza, and two, what's happening in the West Bank. I mean, what is the overall goal? What is the regime trying to do? Because it really does seem that in the middle of all of this, as it's increasing its violence, even on the West Bank, that this will actually go against them, because a lot more eyes are paying attention to what the Zionists are doing now globally.
Well, indeed, a lot more people are watching it very clearly, and the pressure is mounting on the respective governments in the the Western countries, whether it's USA, UK, France, all over, demonstrations have been taking place. But the key point is that the psychosis that our friend from Morocco was describing has been articulated so clearly by the leadership, and one has to repeat this continuously, because the Western media always repeats the story that the resistance is brutal. They took so many people, killed the babies, and so on. But really, Netanyahu talks about Amalek, the the sort of the defense minister talks about human animals, then you have, you know, the whole idea of mowing the lawn, all kinds of language that has come about. So your question, what is the sort of aim, the intention, really is ethnic cleansing, genocide, pushing as many Palestinians out of the West Bank and Gaza into either Jordan or Egypt. And many of the Zionist politicians have said, why don't, you know, 50 nations take 25,000 each of the Palestinians, therefore there will be no Palestinian problem. I would say, why don't the Zionists who hold double or triple nationalities go back to their countries where they came from?
Right, indeed. Stay with me, Shabir. You know, I'm so sorry, I'm just about out of time, but really quickly, Kevin, 1 minute, your thoughts. Do you think that this ceasefire will last?
Well, I think it's about 50-50. There's a significant chance that it could be seriously extended. I think that the Biden administration, which is a Zionist administration, but some of the people are not the same rabid neoconservative extremist Zionists that Trump had around him and that are around Netanyahu. And so some of those people may actually understand some of what we're talking about, that this is not serving the interests of this genocidal apartheid entity that calls itself the State of Israel. And in fact, they're undermining their own interests, they're undermining their own future, and they are going to all have to go back to where they came from, or maybe better yet, move their entire nation to the autonomous oblast at the Russian-Chinese border, because this isn't going to work for them. And I think some of the people in the Biden administration and the rest of in Western Europe understand this, and they're going to put pressure on the Zionists.
Okay.
And the Zionists
and
are going to realize that they're in a hole and they need to stop digging.
Out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me. Kevin Barrett, editor of Veterans Today, out of Morocco. Shabir Razvi, political analyst, out of London. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.